Gossip, but great stories from across the choral world, and a highly respected choir master.
I hope you'll join me to find out more.
The Choir with Alid Jones. Sunday afternoons on BBC Radio 3 at 5 o'clock.
This is BBC Radio 3. Very good afternoon from me, John Shea, with you this Sunday afternoon. In a couple of minutes, Catherine Bott presents a portrait of the Spanish monk and composer Padre Antonio Soler in today's early music show. And then there's choral music at 2 o'clock as we visit the 2012 Three Choirs Festival in Hereford for a performance of The Canterbury Pilgrims by Sir George Dyson. Now, though, just after 1 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3, it's time for the latest news from Ian Skelly.
Dozens of groups involved with the introduction of the government's new benefit, the Universal Credit, have raised fears that people may face difficulties because of the decision to manage the system mostly online. Charities warn that more than 8 million people have never used the internet. They're also concerned that many won't have experience in managing the payment on a monthly basis. The Conservative MP, Colonel Bob Stewart, has said he dismissed a request by two colleagues to mount a leadership challenge against David Cameron as a stalking horse. He said it would have been silly and disloyal. More than 40 people have been killed in Iraq in a series of gun and bomb attacks across the country. At least 10 soldiers died in a dawn raid on a military base in the town of Jujail, north of Baghdad. Forensic scientists are continuing their examination in Surrey of the home of the British family shot dead in the French Alps. Prayers have been said at a church locally in Claygate for Saad al-Hilli, his wife, and a woman believed to be his mother, her mother. Police in County Durham have recovered the body of a 16-year-old boy from the River Weir in Bishop Auckland. Colin Dodds got into difficulties when he went swimming with two friends in the river yesterday afternoon. David Weir has won the fourth gold medal in the men's T54 wheelchair marathon in the penultimate race of the Paralympic Games. His teammate, Shelley Woods, is also in the leading group in the women's event. A Roman cavalry helmet sold for more than £2 million 2 years ago is to go on public display for the first time. A metal detector enthusiast found the Crosby Garrett helmet in a field in Cumbria. The 2,000-year-old artefact will now be a part of a new Royal Academy show of bronzes. The weather, it'll stay sunny and very warm in the east and southeast this afternoon, but showery rain will spread into the west, and the heaviest of that will be in the northwest. That's the BBC News and the weather. The time now just coming up to 3 minutes past one.
From Ian Skelly. So now on BBC Radio 3, it's time for the Early Music Show, introduced by Catherine Bott.
That was the Sonata for Harpsichord No. 2 in E-flat major by the 18th century Spanish composer Antonio Soler, played by David Schrader. In today's programme, I'll be investigating Soler's life and music. To give him his full title, Antonio Francisco Javier José Soler y Ramos was born in Olot, near the city of Girona, and baptised on the 3rd of December, 1729. At the age of 7, he entered the choir school of the great Catalan monastery of Montserrat, where he began to study the organ and composition. His father was a regimental bandsman, so clearly he came from good, solid musical stock. At just 15, he was appointed organist at the cathedral in Seo de Urgel and was then ordained as a subdeacon there. Soon afterwards, the bishop of Urgel asked him if he knew of a boy who could play the organ and who wished to take holy orders at the famous monastery of El Escorial near Madrid, which had been built by King Philip II. Soler volunteered himself, saying that he very much wanted to withdraw from the world. So on 25th of September 1752, Antonio Soler became a monk and entered the Escorial. Almost immediately upon arrival, Soler began to take lessons from the great keyboard master Domenico Scarlatti, who was at that time in the employment of the Spanish royal family. Listening to some of Soler's 120 keyboard sonatas, it's not hard to hear the influence of his eminent teacher, both in their musical form and language. It's quite possible that Soler was one of the copyists of some of the manuscript volumes of Scarlatti's sonatas, which are now housed in Parma and Venice. Let's hear another of Soler's own sonatas now. This is in C major, and it's played by Gilbert Rowland.
Thank you.
Gilbert Rowland played that sonata for harpsichord in C major by Antonio Soler, one of Soler's 120 keyboard sonatas. Fortunately for us, Soler's wish for a quiet life in the monastery didn't work out quite as he'd intended. Apart from his monastic duties, he was expected to train the choir, provide choral music for services, and provide the royal family with secular and instrumental music during their frequent visits to the Escorial. The Spanish court regularly spent the autumn there. Soler's enormous output runs to nearly 500 individual works, including 10 masses, 16 motets, 50 psalms, 28 hymns, 9 magnificats, 14 litanies, 17 lamentations for Holy Week, and 128 cantatas. We're going to hear a movement from his Miserere Mei Deus now. This is an unusually large-scale sacred work for chorus, orchestra and soloists, a setting of Psalm 50. The psalm actually has 20 verses, but Soler confined himself to the odd-numbered verses. This is verse 9. Auditui meo dabis gaudiam et letitiam. Send me tidings of good news. Turn the eyes away from my sins, blot out the record of my guilt. The last verse of that movement from Antonio Soler's setting of Psalm 50, Miserere Mei Deus, performed by the mezzo-soprano Clara Tokas with the Hungarian State Orchestra conducted by Ferenc Szekeres. So, Soler, who had wished only to withdraw from the world, was being kept fully occupied providing music for the royal family during their regular visits to the Escorial. Actually, his regal connection went even further than that. One of his pupils was none other than Don Gabriel, the Infante of Spain. He must have been a very talented young man, as the sonatas Soler wrote for him are pretty tricky pieces. Soler even wrote 6 concertos for 2 organs, presumably for him to play alongside his pupil. In many Spanish churches you'll see 2 organs facing each other, but they're a bit too far apart to make duetting an easy prospect. It's plausible that when they were playing through these works for the first time, they would have used different keyboard instruments, harpsichords or clavichords, for example. They certainly sound impressive on the instruments for which they're intended, though. Here are Ton Koopman and Tini Matto playing the organs of the Church of Santa Maria Misericordia in San Elpidio a Mare in Italy.
Thank you.
Tony Matto and Ton Koopman were the organists in that recording of Soler's Concerto No. 5 for two organs in A major, one of the six he wrote to play alongside his royal pupil, Don Gabriel, the Infante of Spain. Soler became famous among his contemporaries for writing a treatise entitled Llave de la Modulación, The Keys to Modulation, published in 1762. In it, he demonstrated how to move quickly between all keys. His daring and modern theories attracted rather unfavourable criticism, though, and pamphlets for and against Soler's masterly theories were exchanged for 4 years. Although he lived a sheltered life at the Escorial, Soler's fame spread throughout Spain. He was certainly a favourite with the royals and really took the Infante under his musical wing. Apart from the concertos for two organs, like the one we've just heard, Soler also composed some chamber music for Don Gabriel. There are six very original and imaginative quintets for organ and strings dedicated to the Infante. It's as though in writing music almost solely for the royal circle in an enclosed world, Soler was free from the adverse criticism he might have encountered outside. Soler was able to experiment at will, demonstrating true originality. Let's hear one of these organ quintets now. This is number one, performed by the Razumovsky String Quartet, with Paul Parsons playing the organ.
Thank you. Thank you.
Paul Parsons was the organist with the Razumovsky String Quartet in that performance of Padre Antonio Soler's Organ Quintet No. 1. Soler's life was a simple one. 20-hour days filled with prayer, composition and work on the land. There don't even seem to be any authenticated portraits of this modest and holy man who died in 1783, aged just 54. But although he'd left the outside world behind in his early 20s, he never forgot what Spain sounded like. As well as his innovative keyboard works and liturgical music, he wrote 128 villancicos, dramatic cantatas for religious festivals based on popular Spanish folk song and dance, with lots of small parts so that everyone could shine, and an abundance of warmth and good humour. The 20th century scholar, Ralph Kirkpatrick, commented on Soler's music. "One is accustomed to finding frolicking roseate cherubs, not to mention languorous saints in 18th century churches. But this, for the Escorial, is almost as if the College of Cardinals were to break into a jig." We'll end today with part of a Christmas villancico. All the roles are taken by boys. In this performance, they're from the Escolania de la Abadía de Santa Cruz del Valle de los Caídos, with the ensemble Baroque Pygmalion, directed by Jean-Michel Asler.
Thank you.
A Christmas Villancico, An Angel and a Demon by Antonio Soler, ending today's edition of the Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. And that programme was first broadcast on Radio 3 in December 2007. Well, in the Early Music Show next Saturday lunchtime, you can hear a concert that His Majesty's Sackbuts and Cornets gave at this year's Edinburgh Festival. And that's at 1 o'clock next Saturday afternoon here on Radio 3. And we'll be visiting the Edinburgh International Festival during the coming week as well.
The world's greatest classical music in performance all year round on BBC Radio 3. We're at the 2012 Edinburgh International Festival. Three evening concerts, including on Tuesday night, the great American pianist Garrick Ohlsson playing Busoni's rarely heard but lavishly scored piano concerto. Radio 3 at the Edinburgh Festival, Tuesday night at 7:30.
Yes, and before that concert on Tuesday evening, tomorrow night's event from Edinburgh is a recording of a concert that Philippe Herrewecker gave with his choir, Collegium Vocale Ghent, and the Orchestre des Champs-Élysées. Brahms and Bruckner on the programme, including Bruckner's Ninth Symphony as the main work. That's tomorrow night's Radio 3 concert from the Edinburgh Festival, also at the regular time of 7:30. It's now 2:01 here on BBC Radio 3 and time for the Sunday Concert. Today, an event which took place in July at the Three Choirs Festival. And here to introduce it once again is Catherine Bott.
I'm standing outside Hereford Cathedral in the sunshine watching the world go by. The cathedral has been a place of pilgrimage since the year 794, but today's pilgrims are mainly coming for the refreshment of soul provided by the music at the Three Choirs Festival. This year, it's Hereford's turn to host the festival in its 285th year, and at the heart of things is the theme of pilgrimage. Festival director Geraint Bowen says the centrepiece of the whole thing is this evening's performance of The Canterbury Pilgrims by George Dyson, whom he calls an unjustly neglected composer. I'll be talking about Dyson later on to his biographer, the conductor Paul Spicer. George Dyson, born in 1883, came from humble beginnings in Yorkshire to the Royal College of Music in London at the age of just 17, studying with Stanford, and later in Italy, Austria and Germany. When he returned to England, he became a public school music master, teaching at Marlborough, Rugby, Wellington and eventually Winchester, where he was director of music from 1924 to 1937. These were his most productive composing years. As well as his school duties, he ran an adult choral society and found great satisfaction in writing tuneful, animated music for amateurs to enjoy singing. The Canterbury Pilgrims was first performed at Winchester in March 1931, with Dyson conducting a local orchestra and choirs with three leading soloists of the day, Isabel Bailey, Stuart Wilson and Roy Henderson. It was very popular and several Three Choirs commissions followed, but tonight sees the first performance in this great festival for the Canterbury Pilgrims. Dyson described the work as portraits chosen from the prologue to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. The prologue is where Chaucer introduces his cast of pilgrims as they assemble at the Tabard Inn in Southwark. There are separate movements for 13 of the pilgrims altogether, with a prologue and a concluding envoi. So, this is what we're going to hear in the first part of the Canterbury Pilgrims. The prologue opens with a trumpet fanfare built on the notes of Dyson's own musical motto, G and D, and the music bustles about, setting the scene at the inn. Although a thoughtful quasi-medieval shrine motif, played first by woodwinds and later sung by the chorus, reminds us that the pilgrims are heading for Canterbury, a place of healing. And they're all on horseback, giving Dyson wonderful opportunities to hint at the character and breeding of each rider's mount, from splendid charger to hired hack. The first pilgrim portrait is of the knight that loved chivalry. With him is his son the squire, a lover and a lusty bachelor. They're followed by the nun, Chaucer called her the prioress, who is perhaps not the world's most devout professed lady, with her fine clothes and that gaudy brooch, with its sentimental motto, Love Conquers All. Two male clerics now, the gluttonous monk, and in sharp contrast, the shabby and ascetic clerk of Oxenford. And finally, in part one, we hear all about the haberdasher and his fraternity. A carpenter, a weaver, a dyer, and a tapestry maker, all senior members of medieval tradesmen's guilds, with their own personal cook. And the merchant, a tycoon of the Middle Ages, complete with fashionable Flandrish beaver hat. Chaucer is pretty merciless about him and his kind, and the first part of The Canterbury Pilgrims ends with some faint praise damning of this forked-bearded businessman. With his bargains and with his borrowings, forsooth, he was a worthy man withal. Dyson makes it clear on his title page that Chaucer's words are set to music for chorus, orchestra, and three soloists, in that order. So that's how I'll introduce them. Already on the platform here in Hereford Cathedral are the Festival Chorus and the Philharmonia Orchestra leader Jolt Tihamer-Visonte. And they're joined by three solo singers, soprano Susan Gritton, tenor Alan Oak, and bass baritone Simon Bailey. Part one of George Dyson's The Canterbury Pilgrims is conducted now by Martin Brabbins.
Thank you.